First of all, thanks for having accepted our invitation to be with us. I was just saying in Portuguese that it will be interesting because it's Europe and USA are two realities differ in a lot of ways, and. We have some questions to you.
Yeah.
And the first one, the obvious one, is how did the idea came up for your podcast? How did all this happen?
So how the idea came up for the podcast. First of all, thanks for having me on. I always enjoy talking to other podcasts, and especially people who listen to the show. And I find it very interesting how video games are different in different parts of the world. You know, I obviously have a very American perspective on this, and I always find it interesting to hear what systems and games were popular in other regions, and even what games people are collecting now that maybe were or weren't popular in their area. But yeah, how did this podcast start? So it started in 2009. So there were a few of us that were fans of a different retro gaming podcast. So back when podcasting was kind of a new thing, there was a podcast called the Nintendo Retrocast that was that had a decent number of fans. I don't know, a couple hundred maybe. And the guys that did that show, one of them now does the Cartoon Retrocast, which we've mentioned on the show a couple times. But they did their podcast like maybe 3-4 years. And then they split up. They said they didn't want to do the show anymore. Maybe they talked about everything they wanted to talk about. And a few of us who were fans started talking on message boards about maybe we should get together and do our own podcast. Seems like something that is kind of easy to do, right? Anyone can buy a microphone and a recorder and start doing it. And initially there were like 5 of us involved in it. So there was a guy who went by the handle Hemrock, who was kind of the lead in convincing us all to do this crazy idea. And we had a few other people. We had Chris, Nick, Rob, and then I actually joined in like the second episode. So they did like a first episode, and I said, I don't really know if I have time to do something like this. And then I listened to their show, and it was kind of fun. So I said, I'll hop on the next round. And then the 5 of us all recorded together for about a year, more or less. And then people started having like personal things come up. So like Chris was about to get married and he didn't really have time to do the show anymore. And he kind of dropped off, and Hemrock had, I'll call it a career thing. He had to dedicate more time to his career and he had to drop off. And then Nick was with us for like another 6 months to a year, but then he had some family things come up and he had to drop off. And Rob and I still like doing the show a lot. So we kind of evolved the format a little bit to where it was just the two of us and then some guests. You know, we do a few different guest hosts a year. And then we kept the show going for, 5 years since that sort of initial idea we had. Like, initially it was more of like a group discussing kind of show, like maybe less news, more randomly talking about retro game memories. And then we sort of steered it into what it is now. And we've gone, you know, it's funny. It's like we kind of expected it to be really easy, but then it turns out there's a lot of busy work you have to do, like maintaining a website. And, you know, we've had periods where we had more downloads than our host would let us do, and we had to fix that. I mean, just all kinds of fun stuff. But it's been fun, you know. And one of the other reasons I wanted to do a podcast is there was another show I was a big fan of called Retro Gaming Radio, which started in like 1997. So this is before podcasts. Like, you had to go to this guy's site and download the MP3 and play it on your computer. And he stopped doing his show right around 2009 also. So I just sort of said, geez, there's not a lot of retro game podcasts out there right now. This was around the time like Retronauts, if you've heard of them, they went on extended hiatus for a while too, right around then. So at least my motivation was, you know, we need some new shows because a bunch of them kind of stopped around the same time.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for you guys to release the first, like, 20, few episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been kind of working on that. So if you listen to the show early on, obviously you got him then, but we didn't know what we were doing in those episodes. So like the audio quality on those is pretty bad. I mean, they sound terrible. Some of them do. Some of them sound okay. Some of them sound a little rough. And I kind of want to do a George Lucas on them and fix the audio and put them back out. So when people hear it, they don't think we're just like a couple teenage kids sitting in front of a microphone. I'd really like to clean up the audio and then put them back out. And then, like, we moved hosts recently, so I have room. Like, one of the problems we had is we went really cheap at first, and we bought like this $5 a month GoDaddy podcast hosting package, but it had a limit on how much you could store. So like after a year, we ran out of space to start dropping episodes. So I changed to a different service a while ago, and that's the other problem. But I'd like to go clean those up and put them back out.
Yeah, I remember I started listening to the Retro League. I found you guys through iTunes.
Okay.
I don't know if a lot of people found you through iTunes, but I did. But I started listening to you in 1:15 or 1:16, wow, maybe, something like that. Okay. And I obviously went to hear the older episodes because I thought, well, there's another 100 episodes that I need to listen. So that's cool. That's a lot of time. And I listened to all of those. But I realized, whoa, I'm missing like the first 20-something episodes. I don't remember how many. I was like, no, I want to listen to those 20-something episodes because I was waiting every week for a new episode, and I was listening every day to the podcast, one episode a day at night. And I was like, ah, damn it, I need 20 more episodes to listen to. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Well, I can hook you up with our first 20 episodes. That's not a problem.
Well, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be really cool. Can I go with the second question, guys? Yeah. If you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So yeah. I wanted to ask, how many elements were you? I remember that you were not a. You were not on every episode, at least on the first few episodes that I listened to, but you already answered that question. You were 5, right? But why were you not in those first episodes, and then you were very regular after that? So
it was really time. I was working an awful lot then. Like, so 2009, I was on a really 2009 2010. I was on like the worst project I've ever worked on in my life, and I was working. I mean, I'm not trying to exaggerate here, but I was working 60 hours a week minimum every week, and I have 2 kids, and you know, taking a couple hours out to talk about video games just wasn't really something I had time to do on a regular basis. And then the more often I did it, I found it was actually somewhat therapeutic, because like at work I don't really get to talk about video games because I get fired. Like, that's not my job. And
but you do have an Atari 2600 in your office, right?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I have actually, it's a clone. It's one of the clone systems, because then I can hook it up to a projector. Oh, so, yeah, because you can't, the old school Atari, you can't hook it up to a modern, well, not easily, to a projector or anything, but the new reproductions you can.
Yeah, that's another very different thing about Portugal and US. I mean, we don't have Atari 2600, like, almost at all. There's,
really?
Yeah, I think there's 10 in Portugal total. I'm kidding, but there's really few of them. And there are some clones like the Atlantis TV and something like that. It's really weird. But, yeah, the Atari VCS or 2600 was never popular here. I think we only received the Atari 2600, the junior model. I think we never did get the older one.
Yeah, we had clone systems here too, but obviously we had the Atari. We had, like, Sears is a store. It used to be the biggest retailer in the United States, and now they're all going out of business. And Sears used to make clone systems of Atari and Intellivision that they would just brand, like, the Sears Home Arcade or whatever they called it. And so we would get these weird clones. And then in up in Canada, there was like the Canadian version of Sears did something similar too. But yeah, we got Atari here. I mean, you see them everywhere. You see them at yard sales pretty often.
Yeah, when I watch YouTube videos, you know, like from American people, they go to swap meets and, well, oh, there's a box full of Atari 2600 games. What the fuck? it's very different from here. Well, this is a bit off topic, but with the NES, it's the same thing. Everybody played NES games here, like Super Mario Brothers. Everybody played it. Everybody played Contra, Ice Climber, and stuff like that. But never on the original system, or like 99% of the people was not on the original system. It was just clones of the NES. And yeah. Cartridges that had like 9,999 games, where only 12 were different, and then it's Mario with the blue dress and stuff like that. Really weird stuff.
Yeah. Those weird clone games never made it out here. I don't know why. I mean, it could be because we tend to crack down on bootleg operations here a lot. Like, swap meets, you can still find people selling bootleg CDs and, I guess, games and stuff. But, those crazy combo carts, I don't think I've never seen one in the wild here. Hmm. I've seen, like, at game shows, you know, like, a gaming convention, I've seen people selling, but they're always Japanese ones.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's proceed.
Yeah.
Go on, Miguel. Go on.
I was going to the next question, which you talked a little bit before, but I wanted to know how the format of your podcast evolved a little. And what were some of the changes that you made along the years in terms of like topics that you discuss? You mentioned that in the beginning there weren't much news. It was much of a discussion. Now you have like news and virtually retro and stuff like that. Tell us about how you came up with those ideas and you evolved them along the time.
Okay. I got to think about how we did that. Like, I mean, we always had some news on the show. Not a lot, but early on, we tended to do a lot more stuff about like eBay auctions than news. So we had a couple segments that were around horribly priced things on eBay. And we still bring that out every now and then. But you can only go so far with that, I think, before it kind of becomes a running, you know, more of like a running joke than a real segment. Virtually retro, we probably started doing that maybe 6-8 months, maybe a year into the show. I guess I have to go back and double check when we started doing that. Like originally, we just had news, and we had sometimes re-releases in there, and sometimes just regular news. And then we decided to split those up into two different segments. One just here's what's been released this week, either re-releases on Virtual Console or like Steam or indie games that sort of look like a retro game. Rob and I are both big into those. So that was part of, I think he and I were the main reason those got included on the show, because we like talking about these new games. I mean, part of it is that there's only so much retro gaming news in the world, because you're talking about things that happened 20 years ago. So mixing in some of these new games kind of keeps things fresh, you know, so we can talk about stuff like Shovel Knight or To the Moon, stuff that looks like an old game but is new. And the news has been, like I said, it's pretty much always been there, and the size kind of varies based on like what's happening. I mean, like I'm looking at our agenda for tomorrow's show, and there's like 7 or 8 things on there, so I probably got to cut 1 or 2 out. Mostly because there was this news story about the PlayStation prototype someone found in his dad's attic, and we'll end up talking about that for a couple hours probably.
Lucky bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still skeptical about that thing because, hold on, my kids are yelling in the background. Hold on. My kids are just waking up now and they're yelling. So anyhow, like the reason I'm skeptical, it would be very hard to make that, I guess. If you had a 3D printer and a lot of time, I guess you could make that. But like the name PlayStation as one word, like Sony didn't change that until right before they released the system, I think. Like, they'd always called it PlayStation with two words.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I have the timing wrong on that, but I thought they didn't change it till, I mean, really, really late. And all the prototype has it as one word. So I was a little bit skeptical there. But otherwise, the thing looks pretty legit. We'll see. Hopefully he can get the thing running and we can watch a full motion video game on it or something. I'm sure that's all they were. I mean, I just sort of assumed that if that system had been released, it would be a lot of full motion video games that everyone hated.
Wouldn't you love that?
Yeah. I like full motion video games, but, you know, most people don't. You know, like, we'd end up getting Night Trap with Mario or something on there.
Yeah.
No one would like it.
That would be awesome.
I'd play it. Like, I'd absolutely love that.
No, but I also like the full motion video games. I think it's very particular of that time, you know? And that's cool. I think that's really cool. And they're really cheesy. I like cheesy movies as well, so I like full motion video games.
Yeah, so that's part of it too, is like, I'm not going to pretend to know how television works in other countries, but growing up, like, we used to get these bad UHF stations. So you have, I don't know if TV works the same everywhere, but there's, on old American TVs, there's two sets of stations. There's VHF stations, which would run channels 2 through 13. And those were all like mainstream, like CBS, NBC, like main network programs. And then you had UHF, which it seemed like anybody, you know, anybody with an antenna could create a UHF station. And those were like channels 20, or no, it was more than 20, like 30 through 80, something like that. I mean, there's like 50 different channels. And it depends where you lived. If you lived in the, you know, the sticks, you could get four UHF stations. If you lived near a city, you got like 20 UHF stations. And, you know, so I had this old TV when I was younger, and I would flip the UHF stations, and there'd be these really terrible old horror movies on all the time. I mean, these stations would just play, not so much Friday the 13th, but like the old, you know, Vincent Price kind of stuff. Like really, you know, House on Haunted Hill, old cheesy horror films. And I think that's why I like the full motion video games, because they all remind me of these horrible horror films I used to watch on UHF stations.
Well, here in Portugal, it's a bit different.
Let me just tell you that we grew up with only two channels until the early 90s, and then two more, and we have four channels until just
we still only have four channels if you are not subscribed to a cable service or something like that. So we had like one channel throughout, I don't know, like ever until the 80s. Then we had two channels, and in the 90s, two more channels. And since then, no more channels if you don't have cable. So it's a bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have like these antenna channels. We don't have a lot of them anymore because most people have cable. But we have, if you have cable, you have, oh, geez, I have something like 200 channels on my cable package, and I don't even know what most of them are.
I don't even watch TV, and I have like 60 channels now. It's funny, this is really off topic, but it's funny when someone comes selling like a cable package or something like that, and they go like, whoa, but we offer 120 channels, and I say, well, I watch zero of them, so it's not really relevant to me.
Yeah. And you can still do, like, we still have, like I mentioned, we still have antenna television out here, like over the air, but it's like mostly Spanish language channels now seem to be the over the air ones. Minus like the big networks, you know, three big networks have it. Like I keep an antenna hooked up just so I can watch football,
mm-hmm.
American football. Sorry, to be more specific.
Yeah. Like, it's called soccer there, right? Our football.
No.
Oh, it's
right. Very right. It's football. European football is called soccer here, right? Nobody watches that in America.
Yeah.
Though. I mean, American football, which nobody watches outside of America.
Exactly, yeah. Well, there are a few fans here, actually.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. Yes. One of my best friends actually is really into American football.
Really? What, so what team? What's the popular team there?
on America, I have no idea. I don't talk with about that with him. I mean sometimes because he talks about Madden and I don't understand what Madden is because I don't know how to play it. It's really weird to me. But I'll let you know. I'll ask.
You know,
him.
It's a video game.
Yeah, it's a video game. So. But right. I'll ask him and I'll let you know what's popular here. Well, I really, it's not, it's just one person.
All right, the sports so. are so, something popular.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's
all,
go into
all the American sports like NBA, NFL. There are a lot of people watching those here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, NBA is quite right, cause, popular. Yeah, because NBA, a lot of NBA players play in Europe. Like started their career in Europe, or maybe at the end of their career go back to Europe. So I get NBA being popular outside of the U.S.
Yeah.
And there's so much money in it too. I mean, the NBA guys make way more than the football guys. For whatever reason, they get paid a lot more.
Yeah. Actually, in my local town, it's basketball. It's a very popular sport, actually. I remember there was an American American player on our local team, like 2 years ago or something. I believe it's a good team. I don't know a lot about basketball, but I believe it's one of the best teams in Portugal, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that. I could be terribly wrong. So let's go into video games again, or the Retro League podcast again. So what were your biggest difficulties creating the podcast, and in the long run, obviously?
Yeah, you know, in the long run, it's most of our problems have been of a technical nature. Like, Rob and I like doing the show. I don't think he and I have ever had a disagreement about anything on the show. So, like, that part's gone really well. Where things tend to be a problem are really in like the hosting space. So I mentioned before, we originally started the show on this cheap GoDaddy package, and then GoDaddy said, you know what, we're not making money selling podcast services, so we're just going to shut everything down and delete everybody's files. So then we had to set up a new web host and move files over and create, you know, new accounts. So it's just that kind of headache of, okay, we got to move everything over. Now I'm running a WordPress site, and I got to deal with WordPress security. And what else? Oh, forums. Like, so we used to have a free forums site. So if you know, there's a domain out there called freeforums.org, and anybody can set up a forum there. And we originally set up the forums there. It was actually Hemrock, one of the guys who started the show, who set up the forums. And it was fine, except on free forums, there were all these like really offensive ads, you know, like, you know, Cialis and adult sites and all kinds of stuff. That's like all the ads were stuff I didn't really feel represented our show. So we shut that down and set up our own forum site. And then I realized, oh, wait, dealing with like forum spammers is a lot of work. So I have to go in and do a lot of work to just dumb things. Like I have to block the entire country of Ukraine and Russia and China from accessing our forums because it's just easier than dealing with spammers one at a time. And I feel bad if we have listeners in Ukraine who want to contribute to the forums. I feel bad about that. But I just don't have the time to one by one blacklist spam IPs. So I just do whole country blocks. And just stuff like that. Like the biggest challenges have all been, like, if you get more than five listeners, you start to have to deal with server space problems, server bandwidth, forums. Like, we've never really had a problem with trolls, like, you know, people that are just sending us. We had, like, one person who used to send us a lot of annoying emails about, like, things we got wrong in the show. I don't know if you ever had that, but, like, we would get a lot of, well, here are the 20 things you got wrong in this week's episode kind of email.
We didn't.
Yeah, and eventually I said, you know what, just tune it out. Just don't even read them anymore.
Well, actually, I love the Retro League forums because everyone's just so polite. There's no trolls in there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And
It's because I ban people really, really, really quickly if they start to troll.
Yeah. So you really did a good job with that. I remember on the old forums, there was at a certain time, a lot of Scientology heads. You were talking about those kind of heads. I remember that. There was a lot of Scientology heads on the old forums.
That's right. Yeah, we did. Yeah, I forgot what the Scientology heads. Yeah, they're, I guess they're in Europe too. That's right. I mean, they're headquartered in Florida, right? Yeah, Clearwater, Florida, something like that. But yeah, they're everywhere.
Absolutely, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Can I go with the next question, Miguel, Vitor?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Next question is, do you think the podcast format is one to endure, or do you think it's actually doomed by the rising of popularity, YouTubers and their channels, like that kind of content, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now YouTube is maybe a little more popular. It's sort of like different audiences. I think, at least from listeners that I've talked to, almost everyone that listens to our podcast, I think, listens to it in their car. Like, it's a thing you download because radio, like, your options when you're in the car are like, well, I can listen to radio in the morning, and morning radio is terrible. It's, you're either listening to the same five songs played endlessly, or people you don't really care about talking about things you don't really care about. And if you don't like sports, I like football, and right now it's baseball season. I don't really like listening to guys talk about baseball. So when I'm in the car, I put a podcast on. You know, like, we're in a really great time where you have the ability to, you know, listen to the kind of media you enjoy. So I commute 10 hours a week, let's say, I spend in my car, right? So in that 10 hours, I can listen to just podcasts or news about things that I like to listen to. And I think podcasts will always have a real big place there. YouTube, for me, I know some people listen to our show on YouTube because they just, like, they're at the office and they just put it on. They aren't actually watching the video. They're just listening to it in the background. It's actually a real small number. I mean, we have like 20 people who do that.
Well, I'm one of them.
Yeah, it's not a real big number. I don't know how views are calculated in YouTube, but it's not a real big number because I think it's easier to download the podcast to your phone or something. But we don't do like a lot of flash, like we don't do video. We don't do let's play videos, that kind of stuff. I don't think we're not going to start. I'm not really interested in, yeah. Well, all right, I'm going to play Super Mario Brothers and talk about it now.
Yeah, please don't.
Plenty of people are doing that already. So you don't need me to do that too.
Yeah. Actually, I just don't use iTunes anymore. So, yeah, I usually watch it live on YouTube because I'm on the PC at that time. Because when you record on YouTube, when you stream on YouTube, it's just evening here, Sunday. So I just watch it there. It's easier for me.
Yeah, because we switched to Monday nights recently because Rob's work schedule changed. So he now has to work Sunday nights.
Yeah, it's just I'm home at that time.
So we're not recording like weird. What would be a weird hour for you on Monday? Unfortunately, we record kind of when pro wrestling is on. That's the only real problem with our new time.
Well, that's not popular here.
Yeah, it's a very like America, Japan, Mexico. I think are the countries where it's most popular.
It was really popular in the 90s.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. Yeah, and in the 90s. There was like a Saturday morning, we had like a whole block of cartoons from like 8 a.m. to 12 a.m. Right. And the very last thing that closed the whole block was WWE. And we all watched that and we were all fans.
Actually, it was WWF at the time.
WWF, yeah, yeah. Like the Hulk Hogan era and
Yokozuna.
Yokozuna.
This is early 90s then.
Yes.
Okay.
That was really good. I loved wrestling back in the day. Actually, one of my favorite Mega Drive games that I rented a lot of times in my local, in a local store, was Super WrestleMania. I loved that game. It's really bad, but I love it.
Yeah, yeah, I have that one. I've got that over here. I buy every wrestling game. No, there's really, there's like one good wrestling game. I think like WCW, NWO Revenge is good. And every other wrestling game is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Oh, WWF, you know, WrestleMania, the arcade game is fine.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. That's really good.
Yeah. And that's got Yokozuna, so you know that.
That had Yokozuna and Bam Bam Bigelow and Dunk the Clown. That was really cool. But then popularity just fade away here when it comes to wrestling. I don't know why, actually. But when it became WWE and it was like SmackDown, Raw, and that kind of stuff, I don't know. It's just, it wasn't popular at all.
Yeah, it's different. I mean, we have between WWE and some of the other promotions, there's wrestling shows on three nights a week in America.
Okay.
It's just, it's always been not like hugely popular, and there's some areas where it's really popular. Minneapolis, for example, as wrestling has always been really popular up there. And, you know, I guess the thing is, if you get like a million viewers, you're considered a big hit TV show, and wrestling always gets about a million viewers whenever you put it on. So it's, you know, it makes money, and I like it. I go to the live shows from time to time, and it's just, it's just, everyone knows it's fake, of course, and it's just fun. Like, you at least know what you're getting. Like, if you go to a boxing match, you don't know if it's going to be a good fight or not. Most of the time, it's not. Or even UFC. I mean, a UFC fight could be over in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But wrestling match, you know that that's going to be good.
At least you know it's going to last, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's gotta be a show.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's full of surprises.
That's the best part, the surprises, right? When something actually hits someone, it's really cool. Okay, can I go into the next question? As you are retro gamers, or in this case, because Rob isn't present, isn't here, so since you are a retro gamer, what perspective do you have about the retro gaming community nowadays, if you have one?
It's funny. It's a really good group. Now, I mean, I'm mostly familiar with like the Midwest retro gaming community. I think it's probably the same everywhere, but it's a very, I think, open and fun group. There's not a lot of, you know, like in the 90s when these systems were new, people get in debates about what's better, Super Nintendo or Genesis. And I think even modern gen, people get into arguments about PlayStation 4 versus Xbox One versus PC, that kind of stuff. Like the sort of modern gaming community, there's a lot of arguments. And in the retro community, there really isn't. I mean, people like what you like what you like, and no one really argues with you about it. And it's definitely getting more popular. I mean, I've been going to this show in Milwaukee for 10 years now. And the show in 2004, there was like 100 people in attendance. And it was in three rooms in the basement of a hotel. And there might have been more vendors than customers, really, at the show. Mm-hmm. And then I go to the one this year, and it's at least a couple thousand people filling an entire like conference center, you know, hotel conference center, and it's busy and everybody is having a good time. It's really grown a lot. And, you know, there's sort of a particular demographic, and it's mostly people between a certain age, although I do occasionally see some younger people getting into it. And of course you go into stores, there's retro gaming merchandise in just about every store now. Like you can get a Mario t-shirt at like any store in America, it seems like. Or some product with Mario or Zelda on it. Kind of like how Star Wars was for a while. Like, you can just pick up random things that have Nintendo logos on them now. And, I overall feel it's a real... It's kind of growing and fun community. And it's really different than what I would call, like, the mainstream or current-gen community, where there seems to be a lot of infighting and a lot of controversy and things that seem to be less focused on gaming. Yeah. A lot of people spend a lot of energy on how do I make these games work on new televisions, And you see a lot of debates about, like, well, this particular thing has less lag than this other thing. And I don't necessarily... maybe because I just mostly play RPGs, so I'm not so concerned about games that require fast reflexes, so I don't notice. That's like the only arguments I see retro gamers get into, is best way to play games on modern systems.
Well, that leads me into my next question. How did the rise of retro video games pricing affected what you play?
Not too much, I guess. Because I have most of the games I want to play. There are a few things I'd like to get that I'm not going to buy just because, you know, the prices are too high. It's kind of dumb things. Like, I'd really like to get a copy of Fighting Street for PC Engine or TurboGrafx, and it's way too expensive. And it's a game that was never popular when it was released. And the only reason people buy it now is because it was the first Street Fighter game, which is kind of why I want to get it. I mean, I'm guilty of that too. But this is a game that on eBay was probably like a Japanese version on eBay was probably $5 10 years ago, and now it's $30 minimum for it. And it's not a very good game, so I don't want to pay $30 for a game I'm really going to play like once or twice and then never touch again. And just, yeah, weird stuff. I mean, the whole... We talked about GameStop, which I think we have GameStops all over Europe now, if I understand. Like, the prices they're charging for their retro games is not going to help. Like, they're, you know, asking $35-$40 for loose Genesis cartridges and things that were a dollar or two a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So it can't really last. It just doesn't make sense that the prices will stay like this forever, because I think there are people who are going to get on it like it's a fad, like the, I don't know, you guys didn't have the Beanie Baby fad probably, but stuff like that. So in the 90s, there are these little stuffed animals called Beanie Babies, and the company that made them would make like limited edition ones, and people would like mob stores to buy these. And this was right around the time eBay first came out. So people would eBay these little stuffed animals that they bought for $5 for like $100. Because it was like what's going on with Amiibos today. Same idea. And then about four or five years later, price bottomed out, and now they're not even worth a dollar. So like if you go to yard sales in America, you see Beanie Babies constantly because people thought they were going to like buy a bunch of Beanie Babies and retire. So that's kind of going on a bit too. I think some people are buying up these games thinking that it's like an investment. like I'm going to buy a copy of Earthbound for $200 today and maybe it'll be worth $500 tomorrow. I don't think so. So there's some of that too, and it'll eventually crash, and then some games will be cheap again.
We hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's got to be rough too if you've got it. I mean, you mentioned you don't really have like the NES there. So I assume you have to import everything, and high import prices are probably not good.
Yeah, everything that's retro from Nintendo is really, really expensive, like NES and SNES games. They're hard to find and really expensive, which causes a lot of problems. Just finding them is a problem. But when we find them, it's usually from someone who thinks they're sitting on gold or something. Yeah. And they try to sell it for a buttload of money. Yeah. And or it belongs to someone that knows that those games are hard to find, and that there aren't a lot in Portugal, so they take advantage of that. And, well, We are more like a Sega country, but even those are becoming a problem nowadays.
We could start a business, you're saying. We could import, could find NES games at flea markets and then ship them over.
Yeah. Well, someone thought of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I thought, you know, you mentioned like Master System, like, down in Brazil, of course, they got a lot of games that weren't released in any other country. I mean, they were like Brazil-exclusive titles. And that's one where I've really thought about, geez, it would be fun to take a field trip to Brazil and stock up on some of these bizarre Master System games that you can't get in any other country.
We've got them all in Portugal. It's Exu to Portugal and Brazil.
Okay.
You have the purple collection of Master System games, for example.
Okay.
But even those are rare here.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume rare because they don't have to translate it, I guess. And but when I've talked to some gamers in Brazil, and when you do the conversion, I didn't realize like games there are even new, like games that were mass produced, are really expensive. It seems like a Master System today there is about $300 US roughly, which would be, I don't know, 350 euros, something like that, for these systems. So it's just real. The prices there are just really, really absurd.
Yeah.
This is a bit off topic, but since we're on the pause, yeah, I would like to show you this. So the Mega Drive was really popular in Portugal, especially the Mega Drive 2, which was the smaller one. So this was the clone NES system that I had at the time. It's called Mega Power 2, and it's basically just a NES shaped on with the shape of a Mega Drive 2, and that was the Zapper, really cool.
Yeah.
And the controllers are pretty much the same thing as the Mega Drive 6 button controllers.
Yeah, but it's for NES, so what do you do with the extra buttons?
Nothing. At least I don't remember them working at all. So yeah, this was really, really funny. I have Street Fighter 4 for this thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a really nice bootleg game. Very good. And it was so popular here that not only the clones were shipped after it, that we had our own Mega Drive 2. And this is licensed by Sega. It's called the Mega Game 2. This was licensed by Sega. And it has the 6-button controllers. It has region-free. It's region-free. And, well, there's a lot of few little things that are cool about this console. But it's really interesting. It's Portuguese exclusive and licensed by Sega. Mega Game 2. It's really cool.
Yeah, we get some... So Sega, we get some things like that. I have... Of course, mine's under a bunch of stuff. But we get those... we get a lot of those now. These, like, Sega... So I have one of these where it's like a Sega that's the size of the Sega Genesis 3.
Yeah.
Like, we get those systems. So I've got one of those. And those are licensed by Sega. And the only Nintendo clone I have is the original Retron. Not the one that's out now that plays like 10 systems, but like the first one that only plays Nintendo.
When did that came out?
I don't know. 6 years ago, maybe?
Oh, okay.
Six, 7 years ago. I just have to look at the box. I bought it, like, they went down to like $15. A while ago, so I bought one just because it would be a cheap backup Nintendo system.
Yeah,
and I might bring it to the office because it has the AV out, so I can hook it up to a projector at the office if I felt like it.
This Mega Game 2 was probably released in 96.
Okay.
Wow. Probably. Yeah, 96. Yes. Yeah, that's it.
We were still getting, like, you know, 96, we were still getting Sega branded stuff, and there wasn't, like, even the Sega 3, when the 3 came out in, like, maybe late 90s, yeah, maybe 96, 97, the little tiny Mega Drive came out here.
We never got that system.
We did have the Master System 2 and Master System 3, actually, but not the Mega Drive 3.
Yeah, so we got Master System 2, although it didn't really sell.
Yeah, I hear it's very rare, right?
It is, yeah. It's funny because they were cheap. I mean, these things, they stole them for like $30.
Wow.
They were dirt cheap for a while. It just, not an optimal bottom. I mean, it was released when the Master System had, you know, like 5% market share at most. And people just, no one owned a Master System, so no one bought this system either, and they went on clearance right away.
Well, here it's hard not to find a Master System 2. Okay, so can we proceed with...
Yeah, let's get back to...
We were talking about pricing, right?
Yeah, about prices. And I can connect it to the next question that was... do you think that because of that, what we talked about the prices, do you think that it's becoming more like a business for many people or more than a hobby? Or you think it's more 50-50?
So, yeah, I think a lot of people are getting into it now because they think they can make money. I really do. I mean, I think people who have been collecting for years aren't going to start selling off collections to make money. Like, I could probably sell off a lot of my collection and, you know, get a new car or something, I guess. But really, I'd rather have the games. And like anything, when the price of some commodity goes up, out here, we're going to have people that start businesses to try and take advantage of that. It kind of works that way with everything. I mean, our economy almost collapsed a few years ago because of this housing problem. Like, house prices were going up really high, so a lot of people started buying multiple homes and thought they'd get rich selling the homes later, and then the housing market collapsed. And when the retro game market collapses, it won't have the same economic impact on the country as a whole. But there'll be some people who will probably have a warehouse filled with NES games that they bought hoping to retire on them. I just think, you know, it's not going to be sustainable. Like, when people just do it purely to make money, it's not going to work out, I don't think.
It's getting actually ridiculous. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. I just checked the price on Shenmue the other day, because Shenmue 3 was announced, and I was like, what the hell is going on? Shenmue 1 and 2, we have 1 and 2 on the Dreamcast, and we also have the Xbox version, but in the America, the Dreamcast version was never released. But the price on that just tripled. It's impressive. And the Xbox version was selling for 5 to 10 euros, and now it's minimum like 30. It's insane. And there are some selling for 50. It's really insane. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, this one right here I picked up when the Dreamcast was being cleared out. So there was a time in like 2001, 2002 where Dreamcast games were worth nothing. Nobody wanted Dreamcast games. So I bought this on clearance for like $19.99, I want to say. Like $20 on clearance.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I guess I could eBay. I mean, I'm probably never going to play Shenmue again. It's unlikely that I'll decide to play through it again. So I guess I could sell it right now and make a few bucks, but it's just not, I don't know, not worth it.
Yeah, it's because we like the games.
Yeah.
Not the price associated, right?
Yeah, I mean, I recently bought one of those Dreamcast VGA adapters. So I at some point might play a little Shenmue just to see how it looks in VGA. That's about it. And that's the other thing. It's like, yeah, again, these games, you know, 2 to 3 years after a system is discontinued, the games are really, really cheap. And I think what people forget is the things that you're trying to charge $40 for now, someone got for a few dollars just a couple years ago.
Unless it's Nintendo, right?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's just Europe, but games from Nintendo tend to never go down in price. Never. You can find Wii games that no one cares about, and for 40 euros still, same price as they were new. It's impressive.
So there's a couple Nintendo games that are like that. But they do, like, if you go to GameStop, Wii games are pretty darn cheap right now.
Yeah, I mean, if
Wii stuff is cheap, but there's a few... Yeah, I mean, there are a couple titles, like with Metroid Prime Trilogy, stuff like that, that never seem to get cheaper.
But, I mean, if you want a new Super Mario Brothers, for example, which is, how many years does it have? Like, I don't know.
Well, close 10
years now. Yeah. And it's still 40 euros, I guess, here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But there's a couple GameCube games that, like, still go for a lot of money.
Well, GameCube games go for a lot of money today. Some of them,
yeah.
Right?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not really into GameCube, but some of the prices are ridiculously high. Well, let's go into the podcast again for our next question. And 292 episodes later.
Yeah.
And I just realized I'm watching you guys for 100 and probably 80 episodes. It's insane. This was probably 3 years ago. On my holidays when I started listening to the Retro League. So how where do you find the motivation to continue doing the podcast? Is it hard to keep it going for so long?
No, not for me. I mean, I like, you know, there's not a lot of people that I talk to retro video games about, so for me it's like almost like therapy every week. Like I can go and I can spend 2 hours talking about stuff I really like. You know, so I'm not talking about work. I'm not talking about, you know, personal family stuff. It's just talking about something I really enjoy talking about. Like, at this point, if we weren't doing the podcast, I would find some other way to talk about retro games for 2 hours a week, right? It's something I enjoy doing. Now, if we were doing a podcast about, you know, a topic I didn't enjoy, it would be very hard every week to come in and do it.
Yeah.
But it's something I enjoy, so it you know, I could talk about like the podcast or like I could talk about video games or computer programming for a couple hours a week probably and be all right if I talk about programming like at work all the time. So I'm pretty much burned out on that at the end of the week.
I talked about computer programming in college for about 2 hours and I realized, damn, this is not for me.
Yeah, it isn't. No, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's a different way of thinking, right? It's not.
I think it's awesome. It's really cool, but I don't know, man. It's just not for me.
I can understand that because there's not a lot of creativity involved. I mean, it's just.
But there's a lot of rational thinking into it, right?
Yeah,
and that's really cool.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, it is you. It is a lot of things. A lot of math and a lot of, you know,
problem solving. You're always problem solving, and that's cool.
Yeah. And sometimes you're solving very, you know, you're looking at very low level computer things to solve problems.
So we can expect on 500 Retro League episodes, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we've never talked about how long we're going to do the show. It's never come up. So, I mean, there could be some catastrophe, but we're not planning to change anything.
Yeah,
as far as I know, we're recording tomorrow night, and we have plans. I mean, we know what we're doing up through episode 300. You know, we're going to do another tournament, another game tournament, like we did last year around episode 300. And you kind of lose track because it's like I didn't notice. I was just, you know, last week I looked and saw it's 292, and I said, "Oh, geez, we got to start thinking about what we're going to do for episode 300." Like, it kind of comes up out of nowhere.
Yeah, we're on 86. We need to start thinking what to do at the 100th episode.
Yeah, we thought a lot about what to do for our 100th episode. I remember that.
It's very special, then, right? It's the 100th one.
Yeah, so that we planned something big there, and then we just sort of, not that we don't acknowledge it, but it just is almost like just another episode at this point. I mean, if we were using like a hexadecimal-based system, then 100 wouldn't be that big of a deal. You know, it would be or something, that would be a bigger deal. So, wait, not 84, sorry. 14. I'll do the math in my head later, but it's a different number than 100.
Yeah. So, it's kind of difficult to... I'm gonna... For us at the GameStorm, it's difficult to... because of the schedule, right?
Yeah.
We work, and there's three of us, and we can record just two of us, but then, it's, you know, it's not the same thing. So we had a few weeks where we had no episodes. But we just started realizing, well, we gotta go with two when there's no three. Yeah.
There's another podcast I listen to that they actually record, like, emergency episodes that they just save on their hard drive in case 1 week they can't record. I've actually thought like we should do that.
That's pretty smart.
Bye. Because there've been one or two weeks where it was close, where it's like mostly just because one of us is going out of town. Like if I'm going to Disney World or something for a week, then it gets a little, there's a real small window of time when I can record. Stuff like that tends to be it. Or if I have to travel, sometimes for work I have to travel for a week, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so podcasts are actually becoming quite popular in Portugal. Since we started GameStorm, actually like 6, 7, 8 other podcasts emerged. So what advice could you give to people that are starting now?
That's a hard question. I would kind of say this is going to sound kind of weird, but don't worry about what other people are doing. So like, it's real easy to say, well, I want to start a podcast, but someone else is already doing a show kind of like it, or someone else is already doing a topic like ours, or someone does their show in this format. Like, I spend no time worrying about, are we doing something that another show has already done? Because if I did, I would never be able to record anything, right? Like, I could say, well, I want to talk about Square Games this week. Well, every other podcast has talked about Square Games, right? Like, it's really easy to talk yourself out of doing things. And like, there's other retro podcasts. There's one called One More Castle that one of the hosts sent me a note a while ago, like, hey, I just realized our retro game showdown is a whole lot like your games of the week idea. I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, like, people do similar things all the time, and it's fine. Don't focus on what other people are doing, because you'll talk yourself out of doing good ideas. And, you know, focus on doing things that you think are fun. I mean, if you're doing it for fun, if you're doing it because you're like, well, I'm going to do a podcast and then I'm going to make a whole bunch of money doing it, you might be doing it for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
It's not that you can't make money doing podcasts, but you kind of have to be famous beforehand. Like, all the people who make money doing podcasts were famous for doing something else before they did a podcast. Right? So, Steve Austin or Adam Carolla or Mark Maron, like, those guys all had successful careers before they did podcasting. So don't expect that you know, you'll be as successful as them. And have fun. And like I said, don't worry about other people. And don't ever read feedback on your show. That's really important, because you will, like, it's good to get positive feedback. I really like when I hear people enjoy the show, but then you also get people who, I mentioned, like, kind of nitpick over small things, and you can drive yourself crazy reading that feedback. You know, someone who says they hate your show, you'll spend more time obsessing over that than you will over all the good positive comments.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the YouTube channel. It looks like you always remember that negative comment.
Yeah.
But you have so many people that say, whoa, it's awesome, I really enjoyed it, and but you always remember that one negative
one
comment.
Yeah, it's some kind of human nature thing. Like, you focus on the negative more than you do on the positive, and, you know, don't do that. I mean, you're, like I said, everyone's going to make mistakes in podcasting. You'll do something that is, you know, sure, you'll do some episodes that aren't great and that kind of stuff, but, you know, don't worry about it. Focus on what you enjoy.
Yeah. So those were all the questions I had here. I don't know if Miguel and Vitor want to add some or ask something.
I have one question, of course. I want to ask you, what is the best game of all time?
I know the answer.
Well, there's sort of different. Like, there's a difference between, this can sound kind of weird, but there's like the best games of all time, and there's like your personal favorite games.
I'm more interested in that.
Right. And I don't know if those are the same thing.
I don't think they are the same thing. I don't even know if I could say what's the best game of all time. I know what my favorite games of all time are.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite game of all time has got to be EastBook 1 and 2 on the TurboGrafx 16 CD. I played through it at least once a year. In fact, I played through it a little. I was just last night, I played about 15 minutes of it, because I have a game going right now to play through for the, I don't know, 100th time. And like Doom 1 and 2. If I like my top 5 games are probably like East 1 and 2 and then like Doom 2, Majora's Mask, and not all that retro, but probably Grand Theft Auto Vice City is in my top 5. I really, really enjoy that game a lot.
Nice.
It's just because it's so old. I mean, I like it because of the 80s setting. I don't enjoy... I've played a couple other Grand Theft Auto games and didn't like them nearly as much as Vice City. So I think it's really got to be the setting. But, like, in terms of... It's hard to measure for me what like, the best game of all time is. I mean, I could say, like, Chrono Trigger maybe could be called the best game of all time, but people who don't like RPGs wouldn't agree with that.
Yeah.
I think I can argue Chrono Trigger is probably the best game of all time. It's hard to say. I mean, someone might say Madden 2015 is the best game of all time because that's what they like. And maybe, you know, I'm sure it's a great game. Or whatever the latest Call of Duty game is. Like, there's a lot of stuff I think can make it. It's just, it's also like saying, like, what's the best movie of all time? Well, if you don't like action films, your answer is going to be different than someone who really likes action films.
Of course.
Yeah, it's like a
difficult one.
When people think about, well, what's the greatest movie of all time? There's, I don't know, that concept that it's Citizen Kane?
Yeah.
What if you don't like the kind of Citizen Kane, the kind of movies like Citizen Kane? So it's not the best movie for you. And it's gotta be always a matter of preference, right? I think it has to
be. It is, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I really think it is. I mean, when we, you know, we talked to, you know, other listeners or other gamers, and that's something that comes up a lot, is we tend to talk about RPGs maybe a little more than any other genre on the show. And some people are like, yeah, you guys talk about RPGs a lot. You got to talk more about fighting games because fighting games are the best. And I like fighting games. I mean, I like Mortal Kombat 1 and 2 a lot. But I don't have that much to say about the rest of them. I never got that much into the Neo Geo fighting games. And part of it is that, like, for whatever reason, there weren't a lot of Neo Geo cabinets where I lived when it was popular. Like, each arcade had one Neo Geo cabinet and it had 6 games in it. So if you wanted to play one of the games, you had to wait for like a line of people that were playing for the other 5 first. It was just kind of a weird setup versus having like standalone games for each one, I guess. So I never got into those too much. And I've talked about Mortal Kombat 1 and 2 a lot, and we've talked about Street Fighter a bit. I guess we've never done an episode really about Street Fighter, so maybe one day we'll do that one.
Actually, I think I've played Neo Geo on cabinets probably 3 or 4 times, but I emulated it so much that I know pretty much all fighting games on there, and I really love those. But I never played them on the arcades, because the arcades were actually never that popular in Portugal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, arcades were popular here until about, like, 96, 97. And then they kind of started all closing down. I mean, really, once you had PlayStation and Nintendo 64 at home, there was kind of no reason to go to the arcade. I mean, the PlayStation games were as good as the arcade games.
Yeah, the fighting games were, like, perfect arcade ports. Like the Marvel vs. Capcom and Street Fighter vs. X-Men and stuff like that.
Yeah, but even stuff like Ridge Racer and Virtual Cop was real popular in the arcade. Like, not Virtual Cop, I'm sorry, like Lethal Enforcers, Virtual Cop, that kind of stuff. The gun games were real popular in the arcade.
I played... Yeah. There's one game that I never... I think it's completely different on the home console, which is Daytona USA. I don't know. That on the arcade was like my favorite arcade game ever. I played that so much. And I don't really like the Sega Saturn version or the PC version. So I don't like those. I really have to play that game on the arcade cabinet. It's the only way that works for me.
Yeah. There's some some of them make a little bit of a difference, I guess. But that's really what killed the arcades here, was the systems being as good as the arcade. And now there aren't really, like, hotels and stuff have arcades in them, but it's like Claw Games and maybe Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah. I think that the arcades, they were kind of popular here at some time, but because the consoles, the console market just exploded here in the early 90s, because there wasn't a console market here prior to that. It exploded on the early 90s, and the arcades came along at the same time, and they quickly disappeared because it was not that popular. Yeah. So I think it was because of that it wasn't actually popular, because when we got the arcades, we also had the home consoles pretty much at the same time. So it was never that popular because of that.
Yeah. I mean, some of it was just sort of a cultural thing. Like, for a period of time in the U.S., the arcades were like just an area where teenagers hung out for hours.
Like, yeah, it was a dangerous place, right, to go, because
so everybody's parents thought they really were. I mean, there's a lot of people smoking out there. The most dangerous thing was you were going to get secondhand smoke. That was maybe the worst thing going on at the arcades.
I remember my mother saying, my uncle told me, "Oh, let's go to the arcade over there." And my mom, "No, you won't take him. That's a bad place to go."
Yeah, there was never anything bad at the arcades like that. I mean, sometimes maybe it's associated with gambling in some areas, but we never really had that here.
My mom always associated it with junkies. It's like, "No, that's a place for junkies."
I was
like,
junkies, okay.
Why? I don't know.
Right, I mean, junkies would presumably be spending their spare money on drugs, not on arcade games.
Yeah, so why would right? Right. I don't know why. I do remember that.
Yeah, no, we didn't have that particular problem. It was mostly smoking. That was the thing parents objected to, is that smoking was a lot at arcades, usually, and they were pretty, you couldn't see more than 3 or 4 feet in front of you. Now, like the modern arcades, places like Galloping Ghosts, that kind of stuff, you definitely cannot smoke at. Like, they're all about trying to preserve the games that they have, and they will not let you smoke there.
Yeah,
I don't smoke. It's great. Like, I'm perfectly happy to go to an arcade and not have to deal with it.
Okay, Miguel, Vitor.
Actually, I have a small question that got lost in between all the other ones. I would like to know if there's some systems or games that you know that came out here in Europe that you didn't came out on the US and you wished they did.
I kind of wish we had the Amiga CD32. You could get it in America. It was just really, really hard to get. So, I like the kind of cheesy CD games, the weird full motion video and other games of that era. And the CD32 was kind of like that. It was almost like a slightly better version of the CDI, I guess. And there was, like, in Chicago, I mean, Chicago's a big area. There was one store that sold the CDI for, like, a couple of weeks. We actually, in one of the suburbs, there was a dedicated Amiga store that was open for, it probably obviously opened when the Amiga was still popular, and closed sometime around the release of Windows 95, when the Amiga was done here. Because now Windows had a user interface that was better than Amiga, so there was kind of no point to owning the Amiga, I guess. And this little store had CD32 briefly, but I think it was all imported. I don't remember if there was ever like an official American distributor for the CD32. Mm-hmm. But it's a system I would really like to own. I'm just looking up if it actually was officially released in the U.S. Yeah, I don't think it was an official. So it's still, at least according to Wikipedia, it sold 100,000 units.
Wasn't it just in Canada?
If it was in Canada. I don't... Like, Canada usually doesn't get... Let me see here. Yeah, it allegedly was released in Europe, Australia, Canada, and Brazil. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize it was in Canada. Usually Canada gets the exact same stuff as America. And I think it's just a system I'm curious about, and I saw it in a store once, and I've seen it at video game shows, but never been able to play it for more than a couple of minutes. And I'd really like to own one of these and play it. And I don't know. I assume I'm looking at the numbers sold. I'm assuming they're not all that popular. Like, they sold in Europe, but they aren't all that popular there.
No.
Yeah, they're not popular. They did sold here. It's kind of easy to get one if you want out of eBay. They are not that pricey as well.
Yeah.
You can't find them like on swap meets and stuff like that. It's really hard. I did find one Amiga CD32 at a local shop probably like 2 or 3 years ago. But the person wanted, I think, 200 euros for it. Something insane like that. I don't know why, actually. I really don't know. But it was insane.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, like, I know, like, at the time there were the whole Bit Wars thing going on, but I'm looking at the specs on the system. It's kind of hard for me to see how they called this a 32-bit system, because it's got a 16-bit CPU, so...
So it's something like the Jaguar being a 64-bit console?
Yeah, it's using, like, a Motorola 68K variant. So it's like a kind of souped-up version of what the Genesis had. But it's still, the controller looks horribly uncomfortable. Like, everything about the system looks bad, but I'd really like to have
one. The controller is actually not that bad. It's pretty bad. It's not like the Jaguar controller. It's not that bad. I don't think it's that bad.
It's okay. The Jaguar controller is okay for certain games, but like if it had, I think they made a 6-button version later. Although almost no one has one. But for games like Doom or something, it's a kind of a pain to switch through the web. You don't have enough buttons, like. All the buttons are down on the keypad, and it's not when you're trying to do something quickly and you have to look on the keypad. Like in television, it was kind of all right to have the keypad because most of the time you were using it for like menus or stuff that wasn't immediate reflexes. But the Jaguar, you're like trying to do an action game and you're looking at this keypad and you're like, well, hold on, is it 8 or 6 to switch weapons? And then you die.
Yeah.
That's the end of it.
Oh, let me switch to. BFH.
Yeah.
BFG. Let me switch to BFG. Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's it. Do you have any more questions, guys?
I don't think.
I think what's left is to thank you for being here, for accepting our invitation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Send our regards to Rob. And great job on the podcast. We follow you regularly. So you were a great inspiration to us. I think I've told you a few times on a few emails that I've sent you. And thank you for everything, for being here, for your podcast, and see you around.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And thank you very much. This has been a lot of fun.